Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
One change at a time, walking. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. Last year, for Valentine's Day, my husband, at my request, got me a standing desk for my office. A year later, I can honestly say it's one of the best gifts I have ever gotten. I am still in a bit of awe how much I like standing instead of sitting at my desk, and how much better I feel. You'd think it would be the opposite, but my back rarely hurts now. My knees and ankles feel way better, and once I got an anti-fatigue mat to stand on, like they use in commercial kitchens, my feet don't hurt either. The first week I had the standing desk, every single day I doubled my step and calorie goals on my fitness tracker to the point where now my goal is about 3 times where it was before I received this desk. I think all of this is happening because I really don't stand. I shift my weight around, I pace, I step back and forth as I think and type. I am rarely still in my office, unlike when I was sitting in a chair all the time. Basically, having a standing desk has increased my walking, and walking has enormous health benefits. As we continue discussing one change at a time, things you can do to improve health, walking is another small change that can provide big health benefits. There are some benefits to walking that I don't think will surprise you. Walking helps burn calories, which in turn can help you lose or maintain your weight. The number of calories depends on walking speed, the distance, the terrain. Walking up and down hills burns more calories than walking on a flat surface, and your weight. One benefit to walking when it comes to weight was surprising. According to Harvard Medical School, walking counteracts weight-promoting genes. People who walked briskly for about an hour per day showed half the effects of weight-producing genes than those who did not walk routinely. Those aren't the only wins on the weight side either. Walking has also been shown to lower blood sugar, and again, surprisingly, in a study from Exeter University, has shown to decrease cravings for an intake of sweets. Walking 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, can reduce the risk of coronary heart disease by up to 19%. More walking can reduce the risk of heart disease even more. Walking doesn't just decrease the risk of death from heart disease, it reduces death risk for all causes. In an Australian study, regular walking at an average pace decreased the risk of death by 20%, and walking at a brisk or fast pace, at least 4 miles per hour, reduced death risk by 24%. Walking improves your immune system. In a study of over 1,000 people, found that those that walked at least 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, had 45% fewer sick days than those that walked less than once a week. They also found that when those folks did get sick, they tended to have milder symptoms and returned to wellness more quickly. This may be why women who walk 7 or more hours per week have a 14% lower risk for breast cancer, and this benefit transfers to women at high risk for breast cancer as well. As I have noticed with my standing desk, walking eases joint pain. That is because walking helps lubricate joints and strengthens the muscles that support our joints. Walking 5 to 6 miles per week has shown to help prevent arthritis. Walking boosts energy and improves mood. Studies have shown a brisk walk when someone is tired, increases their level of energy better than a cup of coffee. That is because walking increases our energy hormones. Walking also increases oxygen levels in cells. Studies also show that walking 30 minutes 3 days a week reduces anxiety, depression, and negative moods. It has also been shown to boost self-esteem and reduces symptoms of social isolation. A recent study with several experiments found that people who were trying to think of new ideas performed better when walking than when sitting. That creativity increased even more when people walked outdoors. Finally, walking will tone and shape your legs. Walking on hills and combining with cross-training activities like cycling and resistance exercises increases those benefits. The best part of walking is all those benefits don't require an expensive gym membership or a trainer or any special equipment beyond a pair of well-fitting, sturdy shoes. Walking can be broken up throughout your day, too, which means it is time-efficient. Consider adding walking to your daily routine and make that one change to improve your overall health.
Bynum School receives $50,000 donation from Shell Energy Resources. Bynum School received a $50,000 check from Shell Energy Resources' 6th annual Tee Off for Bynum charity golf tournament held on March 17th at Hogan Golf Park in Midland. Since 2018, the tournament has raised over $300,200 for Bynum School. We can't express how grateful we are for Jeff and Miranda Kennedy of Shell Energy Resources, the players and sponsors for supporting Bynum School. Bynum School Development Director Tracy Bush said, "Thanks to their generosity, we will be able to continue to meet our students' academic, behavioral, and vocational needs. Since 1984, Bynum School has educated students with special needs and unique abilities and backgrounds. Bynum provides an individualized approach that offers support and facilitates attainable opportunities. Every program that Bynum School offers enhances lives and expands the futures of our students and their families. For more information, visit www.bynumschool.org. Childcare should be better compensated, by Alyssa Rosenberg of the Washington Post. There are two truths universally acknowledged in the scramble for childcare in the United States. The cost is prohibitive for most parents who need it, if they can find slots. And it pays so little that even people who love caring for children can't afford to do it. The solution? Make childcare more expensive. Here's the thing. The true costs of childcare are currently hidden. Government agencies supplement workers' paltry wages with welfare programs. Businesses shoulder their share in the form of disrupted operations and lost worker productivity. This off-ledger accounting obscures the fact that society as a whole needs the childcare system to function. That means parents shouldn't be the only ones paying up front. When businesses and governments pay their share directly, they are better off, as are parents and early childhood educators. Witness the District of Columbia. It has taxed its richest citizens since 2022 to boost pay for early childhood educators. Early results suggest that bump enables the city's childcare facilities to compete for workers and keeps teachers in the profession. Child care workers' wages are not fair by any standard. One example, in 2021, child care workers in Pennsylvania made, on average, less than retail clerks, hairstylists, and landscapers. The state is no outlier. The Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that 2021 median pay for child care workers was $27,490 annually, or a mere $13.22 an hour, and wages are generally lower for caregivers who work with younger children. Small wonder child care facilities are struggling to return staffing to pre-pandemic levels. Why would someone take on the physically draining job of loving someone else's child and catching all the colds for poverty wages when they could earn more doing just about anything else. For a temporary low-cost fix, Congress could double the number of visas available to low-skill workers or create a special visa category for childcare workers. But wages that low guarantee that even if people entered the field, they won't stay in it. The bigger problem is the gulf between what parents can pay and what childcare workers need to make. To the extent the gap is filled, it's done so indirectly and in ways that create new problems. State governments shoulder some costs even when they don't explicitly pay childcare providers in the shape of benefits. Almost two-thirds of Pennsylvania early childhood educators had applied for public benefits sometime in the previous 2 years, found a March report from Strong Start, PA. About one in five were receiving food assistance, 21% were on Medicaid. Nationwide, the norm is even higher. Between 2014 and 2016, more than half of the child care workforce received some sort of benefit, according to an analysis from the University of California at Berkeley Center for the Study of Child Care Employment, be that the Federal Earned Income Tax Credit, Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance Program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, or Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. Surely it would be more dignified and less bureaucratic for those workers to be better paid. State and local governments that simply subsidize childcare at much higher levels could congratulate themselves for creating good jobs that support the economy. That government funding should come from a childcare tax on businesses. As the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation put it bluntly in a 2022 guide for companies, you are already paying for the lack of childcare, whether in the form of missed shifts or the lost productivity of experienced women who can't afford to return from maternity leave. In 2020 and 2021, the foundation estimated that annual loss of economic activity due to insufficient childcare infrastructure could be as high as $9.39 billion in Texas and $3.47 billion in Pennsylvania. Businesses with the scale to do so could recoup some of a child care levy by starting their own on-site daycares. Outdoor Outfitter Patagonia, which opened a child care center at its headquarters in 1983, sees the facility as key to retaining talented employees. A decade later, Goldman Sachs started a backup daycare center in its New York office to ensure employees could make it to work even when their regular arrangements fell through. The firm now operates full-time care programs at its offices around the world.
First Ben Carson Reading Room to open at Apache Elementary. Through the generosity of Amerigroup Texas, the Carson Scholars Fund has announced the opening of the first Ben Carson Reading Room in Fort Stockton Independent Schools at Apache Elementary School. The opening day ceremony and ribbon cutting will be held on Thursday, April 6th at 9 a.m. at Apache Elementary School, 208 West 18th Street in Fort Stockton. The Ben Carson Reading Project, founded by retired, world-renowned pediatric neurosurgeon and New York Times bestselling authors Ben Carson and his wife Candy, is an initiative of the Carson Scholars Fund. The purpose of the Ben Carson Reading Project is to create a literacy-enriched environment for children to become proficient and enthusiastic readers, a news release said. Apache Elementary is honored to have been selected by Amerigroup to receive a Ben Carson Reading Room. Our jungle-inspired room was created to help students further develop and nurture their love of reading. Our goal is for our students to continue to dream big and inspire them to make a difference in this world, Karina Pacheco, Apache Elementary School principal, said in the release. Amerigroup uses a comprehensive approach to addressing the whole health needs of individuals, and we recognize the profound impact that reading can have on children's literacy, development, and future health outcomes, said Greg Thompson, president of Amerigroup Texas, we are proud to align our support with the efforts of Fort Stockton Independent School District to bring the first Ben Carson Reading Room to Apache Elementary School, and we look forward to seeing the students flourish through reading. Ron Klein, FSISD, Assistant Superintendent, added, "Today more than ever, our kids need examples, safety leaders, role models, inspiration, and hope. Ben Carson Reading Rooms do more than just put books in the hands of children. They inspire young people to soar to new heights, develop a love of reading, grow and soar to new levels of motivation and hope for the future. To date, 269 reading rooms have been established in 23 states, with 8 reading rooms serving in Texas. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund, visit www.carsonscholars.org. United Way of Odessa searching for volunteers. The United Way of Odessa 2023 Day of Caring is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. April 15th. This is a Saturday work day that includes the United Way staff, volunteers, and organizations coming together, benefiting a local organization in need on a project that will benefit Odessa. This year's projects benefit the Odessa Boys and Girls Club, Permian Basin Mission Center, and the Salvation Army. The focus is to lend a hand to nonprofit agencies in our community through improvement projects, which include painting, gardening, and reorganization. Volunteers will meet at the United Way of Odessa office located at 128 East 2nd Street at 8 a.m. before heading to the designated sites. The cleaning will wrap up at 1 p.m. Work supplies will be distributed that morning. Morning refreshments will be provided and lunch will conclude the event. Midland Odessa Jersey Mike's raised $22,000 for West Texas Food Bank. During its 13th annual Month of Giving this March, Jersey Mike's raised a record-breaking $21 million. The two Jersey Mike's locations in Odessa and Midland raised $22,384 for the West Texas Food Bank. Jersey Mike's locations nationwide accepted donations throughout the month, building to the company's Day of Giving on March 29th, when nearly 2,500 restaurants donated 100% of sales, not just profits, to local charities, including hospitals, youth organizations, food banks, and more.
Dear Dr. Roach, my husband had surgery the first time he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. 5 years later, he had a reoccurrence. We investigated his options and decided to go with the proton therapy. I am surprised you did not suggest this treatment in your recent column about prostate cancer. He had no further reoccurrences and recommended it to others who had good experiences and outcomes. Signed, J.G. Dear J.G., in that column, the man with prostate cancer could not get any more radiation because he had already had 2 courses of treatment and his physician was concerned that he could get permanent damage to the colon. A different type of treatment was needed. Proton beam therapy is a type of radiation treatment different from the current standard of care for radiation called intensity modulated radiation therapy, which is localized precisely every day prior to giving the radiation treatment. In theory, proton beam treatment has less toxicity, and although one study showed less toxicity to the system from proton treatment, the only study I know that looked directly at toxicity to the colon found the IMRT had less toxicity than proton beam. To date, there is no evidence that proton beam leads to better outcomes than IMRT, so I do not recommend it. I defer picking the exact type of radiation to the radiation oncologist. Dear Abby, after being divorced for 18 years, I have reconnected with my high school sweetheart. She got in touch with me, and we started talking and seeing each other. She says she loves me, and to be honest, I love her too. The problem is, she's married. She has grown kids and is raising her 8-year-old granddaughter. She says she's sorry about what happened to us years ago and that she and her husband have had nothing in common for the past 16 years. They sleep in separate rooms and don't do anything as a family. I know it was wrong to get involved with her because she's married. I asked her why now and why me. She said it's because she never stopped loving me and had tried to find me in the past. I work in construction and have been in different places over the years. I told her I don't want to break up her home, but she insisted that she's not happy. She told me that a few years ago she moved out but returned because of her granddaughter. We are both in our early 60s. I'm not sure what to do. I know we have fun together, and I haven't laughed this much in a very long time. I have been with others, but never like this. Help. Signed, Longtime Love in Florida. Dear Longtime Love, tell your lady friend you care for her, but what's going on isn't fair to you or her husband. She has some important decisions to make about her future, and possibly yours. Would her husband raise the grandchild if she left? Could she take the child with her? Do you want to help raise the child? Unless you plan to sneak around until her granddaughter is no longer a minor, stop laughing and get serious. The next, dear Abby, I am a 48-year-old divorced mother of one adult child and one teenager. I suffered years of abuse at the hands of my toxic ex-husband, and I'm finally enjoying life for the first time in more than 20 years. My elderly parents were also abusive, so my relationship with them is limited. My parents think I'm going to take care of them when they can no longer care for themselves, but when my son graduates in a few years, I want to move away. I have offered to help, but they insist I should be willing to do more when the time comes. My parents are on Social Security and have little money. My only sibling is worthless and abusive as well, and I know he won't do anything. What's your advice? Signed, I on Future in Ohio. Dear I, if your parents had children in order to guarantee they would be taken care of in their old age, they were misguided. Having children is no guarantee. That they now live on a limited income is their issue. Do not allow them to make it yours. I assume you have warned them that you will be able to give them limited financial help and that you plan to leave the area. Let your children know what has been going on. Impress upon them the importance of planning for financial independence early on, and if you haven't already, start saving for your own retirement because children often emulate what they see their parents do. Make your parents aware that there may be programs to help them lower costs in many areas, enabling them to stretch their dollars. AARP has a state-by-state breakdown on help for low-income seniors.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.